So, Om Maganat, Sivadandasha, Ganinjana, Shlakaya, Chakshur, Minitam, Yena Tasmai, Sri Guruve Namaha. So today we're having what's called Vaishnava Diksha, or initiation, and I'd like to explain what we mean by initiation. Of course, generally, initiation, or to initiate something, means to begin something. What's that? What's that? Oh, yeah, the neck beads are in here. Oh, hold on. Anyway, initiate. Start again. Rewind. So, neck beads. Anyway, so we were figuring out the neck beads. These are counter beads. initiation, or to initiate something, means to begin something. Sometimes the question is raised, why does one need to take initiation? I mean, you can just study the books and chant Hare Krishna and all that other nice stuff and maybe go back to Godhead. Well, I'll explain the different reasons why it's necessary to take initiation, but let me give a comparison first. Let's say you're attending the university, or you want to attend the university. There's two ways to attend the university. One way, it's a fancy word, you can audit the course. In other words, you can just sit without enrolling in the university, and you can listen to what the professor is saying. It's called auditing. However, there's a problem with that. No problem, you'll learn the information, but you won't graduate because you haven't paid the tuition, you haven't enrolled in the course, and you haven't done the necessary things. You're not going to take the test either. So, but you learn something, but you don't get the degree. You don't graduate. So in the same way, before initiation, it is like one is learning about Krishna consciousness and certainly making some spiritual advancement, because simply by chanting the Lord's holy name, you make some spiritual advancement. But if you want to graduate, and graduation in this particular case means you go back home back to Godhead, which is pretty nice graduation. You get your degree from Krishna, you are a certified pure devotee. And when you apply for a job in the spiritual world, I would like to apply to be a cow in the spiritual world. That's why we're having it in the cow barn today. Or I would like to apply to be a coward boy or a gopi or something like that. They look at your credentials and they say, wow, yes, you're certified, you can become a coward boy. So that's why it's necessary, because it's a certification of joining the sampradaya. Because the point made is that sampradaya vinaye mantraste nishpalamadaha. If you really want to make spiritual advancement, you have to be connected to a sampradaya. Now, we're not saying we're the only ones with a sampradaya. Sampradaya means disciplined succession. Evam parampara pratam imam rajashaya vidhu. There's four basic sampradayas. There's Lord Shiva Sampradaya, Rudra Sampradaya, Kumara Sampradaya, and the Brahma Sampradaya. And we're members of the Brahma Sampradaya, a particular branch called the Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. So we're connected in this way. And when you're connected, you get the spiritual potency. For example, if you look at a PowerPoint on the wall, if it is not connected to the powerhouse, it may look good, but it doesn't function. It looks perfect, but as soon as you put something in it, you plug something in it, it won't work. But when it's connected to the whole powerhouse, and it has great power behind it. So when you're connected to the sampradaya, then you have great power to go back to Godhead. So that's one reason why initiation is important. Another reason is that when one takes initiation, you accept a spiritual master. Obviously. And by accepting a spiritual master, it's not simply as a fashion. You know, fashion means, well, I got my guru, you got your guru, but I don't have to listen to him. Of course, nowadays, as we were mentioning in some of our classes previously, not here, but elsewhere, that the disciple does something first and gets permission later for it. But this is not the meaning of disciple. That's because the meaning of disciple comes from the word discipline. Just like in Sanskrit, you have shisha, which is the Sanskrit for disciple, and then very much connected to that word is the shash dhatu, the root of the word, which means discipline. And so we also have the word shastra connected to it. Shastra means things like this, Bhagavad Gita. This is a shastra. And then you also have another word connected to it, which is shastra. Shastra means the stick. Basically, it means you either follow this or you get the stick. Of course, traditionally, sometimes the gurus did give the stick to the disciples, but not anymore. Now we have to be kinder and gentler. I was telling a story this morning about one guru, and I'll tell it to everyone since not everybody was here. One guru who really gave the stick to his disciples, trained his disciple up. So what happened? This is a story from the Mahabharata. Once upon a time, this guru had a disciple, and the guru's disciple was overweight. So the guru was very concerned. I got to train on my disciple, you know, vacho vegam, anasatruda vegam, control his tongue, belly, genitals, mind, and good words. So he needs to eat less. So he said, all right, I'll give you some exercise. Go take care of the cows. So the disciple said, yes, Guru Maharaj. And so he came back a few days later, and the disciple was still increasing his horizontal behavior. He was horizontally challenged, as they say now, a politically correct language. So the guru said, you know, why are you still increasing your devotional ecstasy in that particular way? You know, anyway, he loved prasadam. So the disciple said, well, I'm taking care of the cows, and I'm out begging, too. And the guru said, don't you understand when you beg, you're supposed to give everything to the guru? And the disciple said, yes, sir. So then he went back to take care of the cows. But then a few days later, the disciple was still increasing in his intensity. So the guru said, what's happening now? And the disciple said, I'm begging, giving you everything, but then I beg a second time for myself. And the guru said, no. Can't do that. Every time you beg, you have to give to me. And so the disciple said, yes, Guru Maharaj. So then, a few days later, he came back, and there was still the same problem occurring. And the guru said, what are you eating now? And he said, well, I'm taking care of the cows. You know, they have really nice milk. I just put my mouth there and drink. And then the guru said, that's nonsense. You're supposed to give the milk to the calves. So let the calves drink the milk. All right, went back out to the pasture. Same thing happened. It was starting to get heavier and heavier. And the guru said, what are you eating now? He said, well, the calves, they're drinking their milk from the cows, but there's a little froth coming out of their mouths while they're drinking the milk. And I'm licking it up. Yeah, I'm with the calves right by them. You know, drinking the froth up. And the guru said, you're nonsense. Don't eat unless I tell you to. So then he went out again, but he was very strong fire digestion. He liked to eat, like some of my disciples, they liked to eat a lot. Which is good, because when I go with them, I can take everything from my plate and put on their plate. And they save me from having to eat a lot. And the host doesn't get offended. So anyway, so he went out again, but he was really hungry, and he just was looking. Everything looked like food to him. Everything. You know, the trees, the birds, everything looked like food. You know, when you're hungry, everything looks like you can eat it. So he just grabbed the leaves off of some tree and stuffed them in his mouth. And it happened that that tree was a poison tree. So he became blind. And so he was trying to find his way back to the guru's ashram. He fell into a well. The guru came out looking for his disciple. Where are you, my dear shisha? He said, Guru Maharaj, I'm here. I'm here. Save me. And the Guru Maharaj looked down in the well and said, hey, how'd you get there? And he said, well, I ate some leaves and I became blind. And Guru Maharaj said, okay, I'm not going to help you. But this is a really tough training. They used to have it in the Krishna consciousness movement. So No, this wasn't our movement. This is another movement. So anyway, so then what happened is the guru said, pray to the Ashvini Kumaras, who are the heavenly physicians, and they will help you. So, all right, so he prays, my dear Ashvini Kumaras, waha. And they come, and they say, all right, we'll cure your blindness. You just have to eat this cake we made for you. You know, this cake is medicine. And then he became so devoted by that point, he said, I will not even eat that cake without my guru's permission. So that was the training the guru gave. And then the Ashwini Kumar's blessing to get back to sight and had a happy ending, and he got married and lived happily ever after. So, yeah, because once he got the training in the guru's ashram, Brahmachari Guru Kule, Vasandanda Guru Rita. That's the training everyone's supposed to get. Then they can become great grihasthas. So he was a perfect grihastha. But incidentally, after he got married, he became a guru. Because his guru was so tough, he took the opposite tact. He was too light on his disciples. But that's more of the story in the Mahabharata. That story is in the Mahabharata. Very interesting story. So, getting back to the point, the reason you need a guru is so that someone can engage you practically according to your psychophysical nature. I mean, one can say, there's this whole philosophy called the Ritvik philosophy, where you can take initiation, they say you can take initiation from a previous acharya, or even Krishna, that's even better. You go back and say, Krishna, I want to be your disciple. Okay, my name is Krishnadas. That's crazy. And that's completely crazy, because you don't get any guidance. Because Krishna, you will get guidance from Krishna, but you won't hear what he's saying. The super soul is in your heart. He's telling you, hey, do this, and you're saying no. He's like two birds in the same tree. One is watching, this is from the Upanishads, one is watching the other bird try to enjoy the fruits of the tree. And Krishna is the bird that's watching us, telling us, and we are ignoring him. So therefore, you need an external person to tell you what Krishna is saying. Because you can't hear what he's saying right now. I mean, you can read the Bhagavad Gita. That's nice. But you gotta apply it. You know, the Bhagavad Gita, you're not the body. Okay, that's very nice. So how do I apply it? I don't know. Someone has to tell me, right? And that's the purpose of the guru. The guru tells you, hey, you have this to do, this sadhana. That's the first application. Sadhana, that's for everybody. That's a general instruction. Everyone should chant a certain number of rounds, follow the four regulated principles, these very difficult principles to follow in Kali Yuga. No meat, fish, or eggs, no intoxication, no gambling, no illicit sex. We picked the most difficult ones to give you. I mean, it would have been easier to say, no sauerkraut or something like that. Because he couldn't follow that one, but anyway. But that's much easier. But we picked some really heavy ones. Because in Kali Yuga, those four regulated principles, they bring on, if you break them, principle of Kali, which means quarrel and disturbance and all sorts of problems if you break these four regulated principles. So the guru, this is a general instructor, follow the four regulated principles, chant a certain number of rounds, eat Krishna prasadam. What does that mean? Prasadam is not synonymous with the word food. Prasada means mercy, prasada. So you're eating the remnants of Krishna and you get purified. So there's all these different processes. Or another important thing I was asked to speak about was Bhagavatam class. Actually, Radhika asked me to speak about that. So I'm slipping it in. So there are many different important items in devotional service, you know, chanting the holy names, worshiping Tulsi. And Bhagavatam class is one of the most important. By regular attendance in Bhagavatam, Nashta Prayesh Yavadresh, Nichum Bhagavata Sevaya. By regular attendance in Bhagavatam class, all that's inauspicious in the heart becomes destroyed. Because the Bhagavatam is the manifestation of Krishna in this day and age. The sages, in the Bhagavatam there's this verse where the sages ask, by what are religious principles protected in this age of Kali, now that Krishna has gone to his own abode? Krishna Swadharma Bhagavate, Dharma Yama. And along with Krishna, Dharma is gone and all these other good qualities. So how do we get religion in this day and age? And then the sages answered, this Bhagavad Purana is Bhagavatam, which is as brilliant as the sun. is the solution to the troubles of Kali Yuga. So Bhagavatam class is very important. Chanting the holy names, worshiping the deities, residing in a holy place. Even if you have a home, you make your home a holy place. And these are general instructions for everybody. But in addition, we need specific instructions because we're individuals. We all have a certain psycho-physical nature. That doesn't mean we're psycho. Psycho means crazy. That means we have a certain specific nature. I mean, for example, some people are in man's bodies, some people are in women's bodies, some people are in old bodies, some people are in young bodies, some people have bodies that like to eat a lot, right? Some people, anyway, there's different modes that the bodies are in. That's called varnashram dharma. Like some people like to preach. Some people like to manage things. Some people like to make money and take care of cows. And some people just like to work with their hands and fix cars. So there's these four varnas. Of course, we are supposed to be Vaishnavas, which is transcendental to the Varnashram system. However, we do have these natures, and we have to be engaged according to that nature in Krishna's service, and everyone's equal. It's not that a Brahmin is better than a Kshatriya or than a Vaishya or a Shudra. If everyone is doing their prescribed duty, Krishna in the Gita talks about prescribed duties according to nature. So how do we know what our prescribed duty is? Very easy. What you can do for 10 hours a day without getting bored. That's your prescribed duty. That's an easy way to figure it out. You know, people say, they go to the astrologer, you know, they figure out my horoscope. Horror. And, you know, oh, I see in your horoscope, you're going to become a demon in the future. Don't pay that. I mean, so many astrologers have ruined our lives. Not my book, but someone else's lives. There's even a book that one devotee published, How to Ruin Your Life with Astrology. Anyone read that book? It's a very interesting book. So, yeah, you can go to an astrologer sometimes to figure out who can be a wife or a husband. That's a good idea. So you just try to figure out what you like to do, and you can do for so many hours a day, and that indicates your nature. You may be able to do so many things. Just like Arjuna, he could do so many things. He was able to meditate. But what happened when Arjuna was meditating, he was meditating to get a weapon. He wasn't meditating just to om, om, om. He was chanting om namo shivaya to get a weapon from Lord, the Pashuputra, a weapon from Lord Shiva. So what happened while he was meditating, you know, attempting to be a Brahmin, then a big boar, that's a pig, begins to attack him. And at the same time, he shoots his arrow at the boar, then this Karaka, a hunter, shoots an arrow at the boar. And Arjuna says, I hit him first, it was my boar. And the hunter says, mine. And then Arjuna starts to fight the hunter. So that means his nature was forcing him to act in a certain way. And the hunter happened to be Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva won the fight, obviously. And Lord Shiva was very pleased with Arjuna's chivalrous exchange with him. So we do have a nature. So Krishna advised Arjuna, serve me according to your nature. Kshatriya's duty is management, protecting others. Not necessarily all the time fighting. People think Kshatriya should fight all the time. They only fight to protect people. So figure out your nature, you know, and that the guru's business is to talk to the disciple. Tadvini pratipatthena. Pratiprasana. So it's all very personal. Pratiprasana. There has to be questions, submissive inquiry, and then back and forth. The guru guides the disciple practically in Krishna consciousness. So that's another reason for accepting a guru. I mean, that's why we need someone who's on the planet as a guru. In addition, of course, we have Srila Prabhupada as the Siksha Guru of everybody in the Krishna Conscious Movement. He sets the standard. One should blindly follow. One should be able to ask the spiritual master where and how did Srila Prabhupada say something, or where and how is something in the Vedic literatures. It's important always that the guru is able to give reference when he gives an instruction. Otherwise, it's just, I think is Maya. Unless you're driving a car and I think you turn this way, I think you turn that way. That ordinary things. But with spiritual life, you know, I think that person is an incarnation. I think so-and-so Baba is an incarnation. Why? Because he can pull ashes out of the air. But our question is, where is he mentioned in the Vedic literatures? Does it mention that someone will appear in Korea and be an incarnation in Kali Yuga? I don't think so. Or wherever. You know, I'm just making things up. So there has to be a whole Shastric reference. So the disciple has the right to ask the guru, you know, where's that in the Shastra? Can you explain it to me? So this way, there's constant back and forth, communication, training. So that's another important. So another reason for having a guru, I'm giving all different reasons. Another reason is because by serving a Vaishnava, you make spiritual bent. Krishna becomes very pleased. Why? Because Krishna himself doesn't give bhakti. That may come as a shock to you. The bhakti comes, bhakti is independent, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Bhakti is in the heart of a devotee, and you get a heart transplant when you serve a devotee. That means heart, you understand. Not literal. A figurative transplant. You serve a devotee, Mahatsdeva, Mahorvi, Muktes, and then you get bhakti. And it's so potent by serving a devotee that, sadhu-sangha, sarva-shastra-koi. Lava-matra, sadhu-sangha, sarva-siddhi-koi. Lava-matra is like a tenth or eleventh of a second. If you associate with a sadhu, serve a sadhu, not just mundane association. Prabhupada said that sometimes there is a bug crawling on him. That is not the type of, you know, the bug is crawling on Prabhupada's leg. But that is not the type of association we advocate. We advocate the association of Shushushro Shratalana Shiva Siddhanta, which you hear from the group. So, then, by proper hearing, Bhavanti Rikarna Rasayana Kata Jyoshana Rasu Apavarga Vartmani Shrita Atyura Bhakti Anukramashati. The transcendental sound vibration, Satam Prasangam, Mama Vyudhi Sampada, enters from the ear to the heart, and then the Bhakti Lata Bhish is implanted in the heart. Bhakti Lakshmi is the seed of the creeper of devotion. And then by regular hearing from Guru, from Srila Prabhupada, of course, who was everyone's Shiksha Guru, then one's Bhakti Lakshmi fructifies and grows into the whole creeper of devotion and pierces through the coverings of the material universe and reaches the lotus feet of the divine couple, Shishi, Radha, and Krishna. So that's where we're going. We're going back to Krishna Loka. Some of you may want to go to a yogi. That's okay, too. We can take you there. But generally, the members of the Krishna Consciousness Movement, they're going to Krishna Loka. Okay. So, and as far as another point we need initiation of gurus, we're making promises. When you make a promise to a person, you take it more seriously. If I make a promise to the Brahma Jyoti, you know the Brahma Jyoti? The effulgence of God, or promise to the unborn, beginningless energy, you're not likely to keep it, because it's not personal. It's like I joined the Krishna Consciousness Movement in 1971, then took initiation shortly thereafter, and I made a promise to Prabhupada. Prabhupada said cultured people don't break promises. Of course, when we were very young, if you wanted to have a promise that you broke later on, you would cross your fingers. Anyone ever do that? Cross your fingers behind your back so that people wouldn't see it. But Prabhupada was shocked the first time devotees broke promises, their initiation promise. Prabhupada couldn't believe it, that people would break a promise. Because in Kali Yuga, that's the one principle that's supposed to still be there. You know, truthfulness. But then it's practically gone even now. We're still at the beginning of Kali Yuga. That's pretty amazing. The politicians, the newspaper, everybody's lying. And so it's very important to have that personal promise. Like I remember that I made that promise to Prabhupada. And that really makes it strong. To Prabhupada, who I directly saw, was in contact with, had instructions from, was serving, was eating the dust of his feet, was nice. I was walking on the beach, and I would eat the sand of Prabhupada's footprints. It's good for digestion. I did so many things. I'd steal the maha plate after Prabhupada ate, didn't share it with any devotee. So many nice things. But it's personal. That's the point. It's personal. I made that promise to someone who I know, my spiritual father, my role model. I explained to the devotees before, the reason I joined the movement because Prabhupada was my role model. I looked up to him, I felt the devotion from him, and I had that personal commitment to Prabhupada. So that's really what keeps us strong. Personal commitment to an individual who we know. So these are different reasons. And so the vows of now getting on with the point, because we don't want to get too long. We're actually gone over time already. The vows, he's our timekeeper. He just went like this. So the vows that the devotees are taking, there's two types of initiation here. One type is the Harinam initiation, the first initiation, and the other one type is the Brahman initiation, the second initiation. So I'll speak very briefly about the vows that people are making. So the vows, the basic vows, of course, are four regular principles, 16 rounds a day of the Japamala. In addition, we try to chant as purely as possible, avoiding the 10 offenses, which I'll mention very briefly, which everyone has heard before. First offense is blaspheming the devotees of the Lord, who dedicate their lives to propagating the holy name of the Lord. Second offense is consider the names of the demigods, like Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, to be equal to or independent of the holy name of the Lord Vishnu. They are servants of God. They are not actually God, but they are servants. They're like God's cabinet. Like the prime minister, God is the prime minister, and he has a cabinet. But he never runs for election. He has eternal term. So the third offense is disobey the order of the spiritual master, because the spiritual master is representing his guru and the whole disciplic succession. I mean, you have a right to ask about the order. Say, why did you give this order? You know, please explain it to me. I mean, that's a right. And you have a right to go back and forth and say, well, maybe I have difficulty doing it. Can you adjust it a little bit? Can you adjust it more? Can you not give the order? You don't want to go that far. But anyway, but the order of the spiritual master is there. And then, once you're not disobey the order. And then the next offense is to think that glory is the holy name or simply imagination. Krishna is the same as his holy name. And when you chant, you're with Krishna. Krishna's dancing on the tip of your tongue. Our next offense is to give some crazy interpretation, perverted interpretation about the holy name. You shouldn't do that. Next offense is to commit sinful activities on the strength of chanting. That's like drinking some liquor and chanting in between each drink. Or, like in certain religions, they have confession. That you go once a week, you confess, and the rest of the week you're nonsense. And you think you're going to be forgiven. So chanting, yes, we're forgiven once, twice, and three times you're out. It's like the American game of baseball. Three strikes and you're out. So if you come to God and you say, Hare Krishna, please forgive me, he says, okay, I forgive you. Second time, okay, I forgive you. Third time, you're a nonsense. You're just taking advantage of the holy name. That's called committing sins on the strength of chanting. Next offense to be avoided is that we should not consider the holy names to be like a karma kanja ritual. That means you can perform so many rituals, like right now it's Pita Pop, right? That means you worship your forefather. I won't get into the details, don't worry about it. And certain places, I can tell, it's kind of interesting. Where I come, Fiji, I don't look Fijian, but somehow I come from Fiji. So where I come from in Fiji, they commemorate this Pita Pop by offering everything that the forefather liked to eat before he died. So even if he liked to smoke cigarettes, they light it for him and leave it out on the plate for him. And something called kava, which is a nice medicinal drink. It's intoxicating. So anyway, the way you help your forefathers is by chanting Hare Krishna. Because by chanting Hare Krishna and becoming a devotee, you're liberating 10 generations forward, 10 generations back of your family. and also horizontal. You know, cousins, aunts, uncles, everything. Kaka Shri, Mama Shri. 50-40. So it's not just a ritual chanting Hare Krishna, and Hare Krishna takes care of everything. We have that faith, Shraddha Shraddha Vishwas Shakaheshu Dhrita Nishchaya. And simply by chanting Hare Krishna, we don't have to worry about other rituals. I mean, we have our rituals, but the main thing is they're all supportive of chanting. The havan or the fire sacrifice is supportive of chanting. Everything, the deity worship is supportive of chanting because Kali Kalera Dharma, Krishna Nama Sankirtan. In this age of Kali, there is one dharma, and that dharma is Krishna Nama Sankirtan. So, and then the next offense to be avoided is the preaching the glories or teaching the glories of the Lord to those who are faithless. You just give people what they can understand, and you encourage everyone to chant, but not too much. And I explained to the devotees before that they preached too much to me when I first walked into a Hare Krishna temple in 1969. They told me I was going to hell. I thought, wow, this is just like a Christian church. And they tell me Kalki is coming on a horse. He's going to come chop my head off. From that point on, I never wanted to see a horse again. You know, when I drove up here, I saw some horses, I started shaking. So, and they preached, Kali Yuga's coming, you're going to be short as a dwarf, living underground, eating human flesh. And I said, goodbye. It's not my religion. So, even though Kali Yuga's coming, all those things had certain truthfulness to them, it wasn't appropriate for them to say. So when we're talking to people, we have to speak appropriately to them, compassionately to them, not beat them over the head with the philosophy until they surrender. Krishna says, sarva dharmam prachaja, amikam shavanam prachaja, surrender, you rascal. So we should preach appropriately. That's the proper explanation of that particular offense. So the final offense is to not have complete faith in the chanting of the Lord's holy names and to maintain material attachments. It's not offensive to have material attachments, it's offensive to maintain them. In other words, increase them. You try gradually to give up these anarthas, that's one of the things. And it's also offensive to be inattentive while chanting, because when you're inattentive while chanting, all these other offenses can come out. So pay attention. How do you pay attention while chanting? Study the Shikshastika. While you're chanting, you should be praying to God. Shikshastika is a prayer or prayers that you can utilize when chanting. Ayananda Tanuja Kinkaram. I am your servant, Krishna. Somehow or other, I've fallen into the terrible ocean of birth and death. Please fix me up as one of the atoms at your lotus feet. Please, please, help me. That's how it should be crying when you chant. Help me, help me, help me. Or praying for someone else's benefit. Please let my son or let my friend become a devotee. Save him. Or in my case, please let my disciple become a devotee. It's like that sometimes. So, or bring them back to Krishna consciousness. So we have many different prayers, but it should be a very intense prayer. Then we can focus on the holy name while we're chanting. And you study, of course, the Shikshastika, Lord Chaitanya's 8 instructions while chanting, and read Prabhupada's books. In this way, you'll be able to perfect your chanting. Anyway, so these are some basic vows that are being taken. As far as second initiation, it's called Brahman initiation. One promises to cultivate the qualities of a Brahman, not the qualities of a Kali Yuga Brahman. Kali Yuga Brahman's qualities are, he attacks you in a holy place, asks for your money, right? Pandas. And doesn't let you go. So, but a actual Brahman is Samadava, Kapaksho, Cham, Shanti, Raja, Vaiva, Chak, and Vijanamastakyam, Brahma, Karma, Sambhavati. Those are the qualities. Which means, quickly, he's equal poise, he's self-controlled, he's austere, he's clean, he's tolerant, he's religious, he studies the Shastras, he applies the Shastras, Vijanamastakyam. He's honest and religious. So these are the qualities that we should cultivate. Mode of goodness. Mode of goodness is very hard to cultivate in this day and age because we're coming in contact with so many other things that are in different modes. Karnam guna sangasya sadasa Janmajani issue, as Krishna says in the Gita. Whatever we come in contact with has a mode of nature. Like if you hear some music that's not in the mode of goodness, automatically your consciousness goes to passion or ignorance. Or if you do some activity, if you go to see some movie that's in the mode of ignorance or passion, some Bollywood movie or something like that, and then you just look and you see the couple dancing and the man and the woman chanting love songs as they ride through the streets of Delhi on a motorcycle, which is probably the least romantic thing I can think of. Isn't I in Delhi? With all the pollution and everything, on a motorcycle? So anyway, you watch these movies which portray an unrealistic life, and then the mode of passion comes. And then it's true. It comes like that. Whenever you do something in the mode of passion, or see something, or eat something, food is very important too. If you eat food that's too passionate, like too hot, spicy, stuff like that, or even too sweet, then you become passionate. Or if you eat food in the mode of ignorance, of course you don't do that, hopefully. Putrid, stale, decomposed, then you become an ignorant. So you have to avoid eating certain things, especially non-prasadam, and you have to avoid certain activities, and this way you stay in the mode of goodness and you associate with those in the mode of goodness. And then you become a Brahman. Because what does Brahman mean? Brahman means one who knows Brahman. It's not a caste distinction. Okay, so that's the meaning of initiation in a nutshell. And so now we'll give the devotees who are getting first initiation their Hare Krishna names. And so, I guess you can line up. What we have to do is, off the basis is to Prabhupada first, then you go to the deities, and off the basis to the deities, pray for their mercy, pray for their, for them to give you intelligence, strength, determination, to be able to keep going your whole life in Krishna consciousness, and then ultimately go back to Godhead. And then you come to my humble self, or not so humble self. And then you offer obeisances, and then we'll do the vows. We'll ask you, what are the four regular principles? How many rounds do you chant? We do recommend that if you have time to chant more on Ekadashi. Whenever I have time, I chant 64 on Ekadashi. But, you know, obviously if I'm doing other things like preaching, that takes precedence. But normally I will chant 64 rounds on Ekadashi. But if you can sometime in your devotional lives chant 64 rounds, you will find a whole change in consciousness. Of course, Haridas Thakur was chanting 192 rounds. I'm not asking anyone to try that, because you probably wouldn't be able to do it. But try chanting just one Ekadashi when you don't have anything else to do. Turn off the computer. Turn off the mobile phone. I know it's difficult, but do it. And just chant, and you will be happy. And the next day, you'll be happier and happier and happier. Okay, so I guess you just line up in any order you want. The Mataji's first? Okay, ladies first.
Ramachandra.
Oh yeah, because he's an endangered species. The government has a protection order out about Brahmacharis. What? No, yes, go to Prabhupada first, then the deities, and then myself. Yeah, everybody should go one after the other, because it's...
Hare Krishna,
So, what are the four regulated principles you'd rather follow?
No meat eating, no gambling, no illicit sex, and a minimum of 16 rounds.
You left out one regulated principle.
No, no.
Intoxication.
No intoxication. Yeah, I knew that.
So, you balance the Kaddish, and then try to chant more around the Kaddish. That's very important. And we can't ask him to fast on the Kaddish completely. He can fast from grains, but he can't fast completely because he's following the footsteps of Bhim Sen. He's a wolf belly, you know. Anyway, we're not going to give him that name. Don't worry. All right, so you get the beads with your right hand. You ready? Right hand. Your name now is Krishna Gopal Das. Okay, who's next? Okay, right. Yeah, somehow or other they should offer basin. Don't offer basin this way because your feet go towards the deep, you go straight out, which is permitted also. All right. Okay, so what are the four regular principles?
No eating meat, fish, or eggs, no intoxication, no illicit sex, and no gambling.
Very good. How many rounds today?
Minimum 16 rounds, and as much as possible on
the Kaddish. Very nice. So, ready? So you get the beads with, this is your, using your beads. You get the beads with your right hand. So your name now is, let's see what your name should be. Okay. Radha Shyam Sundar. Okay. London Eye. Okay. Okay, so what are the four regular principles?
No intoxication, no gambling, no meat, fish, egg eating, and no illicit.
Okay, and how many rounds?
I'll try to swim around today.
Good.
But on Ekadashi, I'll try to increase.
If you can. You have to be practical because you have a home to take care of, and family. So you got the bees with your right hand. So your name now, this is a very special name, is Venu Gita Devidasi. Gita, in case some of you may not know, that's the Gita is a song of the flute. Venu Gita. Venu Gita. Krishna's flute. All the gopis are envious of Krishna's flute. And so they speak about their envy to Krishna's flute because Krishna's flute gets to always be in Krishna's lips. And they can't always be in Krishna's lips because they have husbands. And mothers-in-laws and sisters-in-laws. A nice name. Venu Gita Devidasi Ki Jai. Oh, yeah. Right, who's next? Okay, thank you. So, offer vacancies. So, what are the four regulated principles? Okay. And how many rounds a day? 16 rounds a day. Very good. And that means there's 108 beads of each. 108 times 60. Okay. And so you get the beads with your right hand. And your name now is, this is another very special name, right hand. Vrindavan Vilasini. Yeah. Very nice name. Bin Laden, Bin Laden, Vlasini, Ija. Okay, and one more, May. So we take some of these off. Okay. Finally. I'm sure your mother's very happy. All right. And so, can you sit all right? Or just be careful. So, what are the four angling principles? Okay. And your name now, you get to use with your right hand. And, of course, how many rounds a day? A little more, if you can chant more. It's not absolutely required because people are busy, they work and everything like that. So, your name, you get to use with your right hand, is Madhu Priti Devi Dasi. It's also a name you ride around with. That means she who is dear to Madhusudan. Krishna. Madhu Priti Devi Dasi. Nice name. Okay. And I think that's it, right? Nor the volunteers. And he'll get his ramen bread and everything at the cow shed. Actually, it's interesting. They used to have cow sheds where they would punish the children. Did you know that? In India, I don't know if your part of India was like that. Like if a child had to be punished, they would take them to the cow shed. You understand? The goat shed. Yeah. All right. I guess that's it. All glorious to His divine grace. Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada. How do you go?